But first, a look back at the James Whitey Bulger trial. Bulger was the infamous leader of the Winter Hill Gang in the 1970s and 80s and accused of participating in 19 murders. Before he could be arrested, he disappeared. 16 years later, he was found living in Southern California with his girlfriend, Catherine Gregg. Bulger stood trial, was convicted on murder and racketeering charges, and sentenced to 2 life sentences for his crimes. Janet Euler of Eastham was one of the 12 jurors who decided the guilty verdict. She's written a book about the trial titled The Truth Be Damned. It is fiction of sorts. Welcome, Janet Euler, to the program.
Thank you, Mindy. I'm happy to be here.
So what did you know of James Whitey Bulger when you were selected as a juror?
I knew the name. I knew he was a mob boss, supposedly, and that's it.
That's it. You didn't follow this. You didn't, you know.
I avoided it. I didn't want any part. I've never read The Godfather.
So you didn't know anything about mob life.
No.
All right. So to say the trial was high profile is a bit of an understatement. What were the judge's instructions to the jury about what you could or could not do, discuss, read when you were not in the courtroom?
We could not discuss any of it, even with each other. The jurors could not discuss it until we went into deliberations. So none of us knew where the other stood, really, until the very end.
So what was your day-to-day life like while you were sitting on the jury?
Shocking, for the most part. I mean, you go in every day. You got friendly with the different jurors. We had a good relationship going with each other, for the most part. But to me, it was shocking. And I have to say this up front. Whitey Bulger, Jim Bulger, I tend to call him. Whitey is a name the police threw on him.
Ah.
He's a criminal. There's no denying he's a criminal. And in all my correspondence throughout these past few years, he says that frequently to me. Make no mistake, I'm a criminal. But in opening statements in that trial, and a little bit of background on me, I've written a couple books on the American Revolution. So I have a great respect for the pillars that this nation was founded on, and one of them was the judicial system. It was very important to our founding fathers because they were being abused by the British in the courts. So in the opening statement, when his own attorney declared that his client was guilty of many of the crimes, I sat there and wondered, why are we here then? And so I, maybe more than most of the other jurors, was kind of curious as to why he said that and what would follow. And for me, what followed was pretty horrific about the abuses and the corruption within the Department of Justice, the FBI, and Bulger's story even goes to the CIA.
And so you were expecting to be horrified about the crimes being committed by Jim Bulger and his gang. And
yes.
You were more horrified by what you learned.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you anticipate the criminality being horrible, but the way it was handled, the trial, was to me more shocking.
So why do you think you were there? Because he did say, he actually said he would plead guilty, and there could be no trial if they would let his girlfriend go free.
Exactly. Yeah. He said that up front, but that was never brought out in the trial.
You didn't know that.
Oh, they didn't want the jury to know that, no.
Yeah. So as a juror, your job is to listen to the testimony about some pretty gruesome murders. And all of this other stuff that came out. How did that affect you and the other jurors as you're hearing all of this?
Some of us had nightmares over some of the testimony. It affected me. It changed me for life, and I'm sure it did some of the other jurors. Some of the jurors were very emotional hearing the testimony. But nightmares, constantly thinking about it when you're in that situation. You go home and you can't turn it off. There were times I would go home and I would just sob. For me, the 3 times that I actually went home and sobbed were more testimonies that revealed the corruption and what they would do to some of these witnesses to get them to say certain things. And whether what they said was truth or not was highly questionable. The jury in deliberations, for about half of us, we didn't even want to consider the testimony of the U.S. attorney's key witnesses because we didn't know if what they said was truthful.
Yes, these were some of the people who worked with
exactly.
Jim Bolger. And were like plea deals, right?
Oh, huge plea deals. I mean, outrageous, immoral. And my question going through all of it, I think, was that, you know, the weights of justice, you see the scales. And if you take the key witnesses that the federal government gave these outrageous deals to and weigh their crimes against Bulger's, it just doesn't make any sense.
They were as guilty as he was in your mind.
They were, and perhaps even more guilty. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have an FBI supervisory agent who was an accessory in two murders and went on in the FBI to be promoted and retire with a full pension that we pay. And he admitted he was an accessory in murders. How do you ever justify that?
Yeah. So when you just going back for a second, when you were called and you get chosen to be a juror on this jury, and you don't really know much about you know that mob life is bad. Were you scared? I mean, were you nervous? I mean, I think I would be nervous if I was chosen to be on that.
Yeah, it was a little bit scary. And then we were not sequestered, which we were all shocked by, even after one of the witnesses was murdered. And of course, we all heard about it because our families were so concerned. And still, we were not sequestered. So yeah, it was scary.
Yeah. What kind of relationship did you have with the other jurors and you weren't allowed to talk about the trial stuff, but did you talk about how it impacted you? I mean, you said some of you had nightmares. Were you able to talk about that aspect of it or no?
Not really. You might kind of just say it, you know, a quick phrase or something to each other, but not to get into any detail, no.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. After the verdict came down, you began speaking about how the trial was handled. So what was bothering you?
A jury is supposed to determine their verdicts on facts. After the trial, because I felt like we were missing a lot. Again, the balance of justice didn't make sense from the get-go, and his own attorney declared that he was guilty of many things. I began to research myself and found that there were many things that were kept from us. And had we known these things, would we have made the same decisions that we made? It seemed like it was a controlled trial. They wanted it to happen in Boston, it seems to me, because again, Bulger wanted to just plead guilty and take even a death sentence with no appeal. His only thing he wanted in return was leniency for Catherine. Not that she wouldn't be punished, but just that they would show leniency to her. Well, Mindy, they threw the book at her and then some. The probation department recommended 2 years of prison time for Catherine. She is going to be in prison almost as long as John Maturana was in prison for 20 murders plus all the other crimes he committed. And the first year she was in was solitary confinement. So I had to step back and wonder why they did this. Why didn't they just let him plead out, throw her in prison for 2 years and be done with it? Every gun charge against him from California had a 30-year prison sentence attached to it, no questions asked. This trial did not have to happen.
Did you ever get answers to that?
No. The federal, I mean, I wrote to the assistant U.S. attorneys after the trial. They never responded.
During the trial, was there a place or time for you to make any of these concerns? And we probably didn't know all of them at the time, but you had concerns. Were you able to raise them?
And during the trial, no, no.
Right. So you began exchanging letters with James Bulger and his girlfriend, Catherine Gregg, after the trial. What was your reasoning there? What were you thinking?
I knew there was another story. The only story we have heard about James Bulger has been from these other criminals who have gotten these outrageous deals. And when you step back and think about it, Jim Bulger was on the lam, and these guys never thought he was going to be captured, first of all. Second of all, even during the trial, we found out through questions from the defense attorneys, two people like John Matarano, Kevin Weeks, John Morris, and Steve Fleming, that the assistant U.S. attorneys would go to them more than once to get their testimony against James Bulger and John Connolly specifically. And if they didn't get what they wanted from them, there was no deal made. They would go back three and four times until they got something that they were content with, and then they made the deal. Now, if you were facing a death penalty, as was John Matarano, or life in prison, as was Fleming, then I don't know. Would you say anything you had to say to get out of prison?
Did you feel like you would get truthful answers from Jim Bulger? I mean, these guys all, you know, they have a history of lies,
right,
and crimes, as they all will admit to. So did you think talking with them was going to get you truthful answers, or were you a little leery about what they might say?
I was a little leery, and I know he tells me many times he's a master manipulator. There's no one he can't manipulate. So I was aware of that, too. And many times he would tell me, "You're naive, Janet." Mm. But he also told me things he didn't need to tell me. And he told me, he explained murders that or crimes that he was not involved in, and gave details of the crime and why he wasn't involved in it. And I had to weigh that out and think, you know, well, he didn't have to tell me he did commit these crimes because nobody was even asking him those. So is he telling me the truth about these other crimes?
We're talking with Janet Euler. Her book is The Truth Be Damned. She was a juror in the James Whitey Bulger trial. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with Janet Euler. She was one of the jurors in the Whitey Bulger trial. She's written a book about her experience called The Truth Be Damned. We're going to get to that in a minute. But first, you mentioned that you had this correspondence with James Bulger and Catherine Gregg after the trial. Would you say you formed a friendship with them?
With Bulger, yeah, to a degree, certainly. With Catherine Gregg, that was short-lived. She ended the correspondence in a bizarre way, and I didn't know why. And I asked around to find out. Now, if you recall, when they were arrested, they were not allowed to communicate with one another. That was part of what came down on them immediately. And at the time of the trial, they were not in communication with one another. I began writing to her. And then she ended the correspondence, and when I asked around, I was told that she was given an incentive she couldn't turn down. And within a week of that, she and Bulger were allowed to communicate with one another.
Mm. All right, so how do you respond to the families of Bulger's victims who waited years for him to be brought to justice?
What was the first part of the question?
How do you respond? I mean, there are families who are, they are very happy with the sentence. And some of them, I think, are happy with the trial, you know, wanting to put some of that to rest.
Right.
So what do you say to them?
I am glad. I mean, that some of them they don't have closure. Nobody has closure, but to put some of it to rest. And there was one family that didn't get that closure simply because the assistant U.S. attorneys, the murder of Buddy Leonard, the assistant U.S. attorneys did not give us any information on that murder. They just mentioned his name twice in the 10 weeks of testimony, and there was nothing for us to deliberate on. And that family, I was horrified and felt so badly for them, but we had nothing to go on. One of the peculiar things, Mindy, going through this trial was to see the relationship of these families with the defense attorneys, not with the assistant U.S. attorneys. We would watch out the window from the jury room sometimes and see the defense attorneys get out of their cars in the parking lot, and some of the family members go over and shake their hands and chat with them. And it was really amazing, and came to find out after that they had been so abused by the government again and again and again. And the defense attorneys kind of came to their aid in putting the government down for the abuses they put the families through. So very bizarre and backward.
Yeah. You also contacted John Conley.
I did.
Yeah. What was that relationship like?
We wrote back and forth a few times. When I started addressing the fact that Bulger claims he was never an informant and asking John Conley direct questions in regard to that, Conley's first response when I began that was that when he got out of prison, he would tell the entire unvarnished truth. Well, all of his appeals were turned down, and John Conley's never going to get out of prison. And when I kept writing to him and asking him to be honest about the informant situation, he just stopped writing.
Mm. All right. Let's talk about the book. All right. So the book, The Truth Be Damned, it's sort of, it's fiction.
Yes.
But some of it is not fiction. It's based on, so how much of it is fiction and how much is, and why not just write your real experience? Why did you decide to do fiction?
Because a little protection, maybe false protection, but that's how I felt, and not from the bad guys, but from the good guys.
So this way you could say, hey, that part, that's fiction.
Yeah.
A little poetic license, if
I
you
could.
Will.
Yeah. Yeah. I could.
Have you heard anything from, I mean, you've been very critical of the Justice Department and the whole process, and have you heard any, has anybody said anything to you?
No, nobody said anything to me. Weird things have happened. And
like what?
Well, I had my boiler go out, and mysteriously, and for 2 weeks, nobody could figure out what had happened to it. And at the same time the boiler went out, a gas pole was put in my driveway without my knowledge. It was just there. And so after a few weeks of trying to figure this out, an old-timey a guy that fixes boilers, I called in, and he showed me what had happened, and a little box up high had been kind of jolted. It was turned. And he said he had never seen that in all his years of working with this type of thing. At that time, I was notorious for leaving my bulkhead door open. I don't do that anymore. And I was curious, and I asked the gas company about the pole, too. And he said, well, it's one of our poles. But then he looked at the chart, and he said, but it's not listed. It's not listed that we put it in. So I was actually talking to one of Bulger's attorneys, just chatting with him. And he said, how's your autumn going? And I said, well, it's going good, except for this boiler issue. And he said, tell me about it. And I'm thinking, why is he asking me this? Mm-hmm. So I told him, and when I finished it, he said, do you think that's a coincidence, Janet? And I also talked to a former FBI agent, and same response from him. So it's like, I don't know. I don't want to be paranoid, right. But so.
Yeah, well, so tell us a little bit about the characters in the book.
The characters in the book, the main character is Alex Fisher, who is a history teacher, and she's placed on this jury with not much knowledge of anything about this mob situation.
She's based on you.
She's based on me. And then we have the other jurors. I get into them a little bit and try to bring out their personalities. And one of the interesting things, too, is the woman that I made a close friendship with during the trial. And, of course, we couldn't discuss anything we believed. And when it came time to sit down for deliberations, we found we were absolute opposites in where we were coming from. That's so funny. That was interesting. We're still friends. and I bring it into in the book a retired congressman that kind of is helping out and directing Alex after the trial's over with information to help her in her research. And her communication with the man is called Tom Devaney, and yeah. Not Jim Bulger.
Yeah, I want to start with that. The very beginning of the book, Tom Devaney is in jail, and he's being strip searched.
Yes.
Multiple times a day.
Yes.
Kind of dehumanized. And now, is that based on some information that you got from Jim Bulger himself?
I got that from testimony in the trial. Mm-hmm. One of the guards from the Plymouth Correctional Institution was there and admitted to those strip searches.
Mm. So, what are you hoping to accomplish with the book?
I am hoping to tell Bulger's story, in a sense, to make people stand back and question whether what we have been reading all these years is really truthful, or if it was just a woven tale kind of manipulated by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston and the Boston FBI. That people will consider that, question that. And also, we need oversight. We need oversight on the FBI, on the Department of Justice, on the CIA. I mean, we didn't even get into the MK Ultra trials that Bulger was part of.
Let's talk about that for a second, because I don't think I had not heard of that before.
Right.
Tell us what that is.
He never used it as a defense. I don't think he realized how in-depth it was, and I started looking into it. He would write letters to me, and he always puts the time of day he's writing them, and it's always in the wee hours of the morning, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. So I asked him, why do you write at this time? And he said, because I have hallucinations every night since MK Ultra. So I began to look into MK Ultra. I got the Senate hearing on it from 1977 and read that. Basically, the CIA destroyed all the records in regard to it. They were testing LSD on individuals without their knowledge or consent, including at least 1,000 military personnel that they admit to, numerous hospitals throughout the United States, many, many colleges and universities throughout the United States, and three prisons. Bulger was in one of these prisons at the age of 26 years old for robbery. He had never committed murder before this. He was given LSD three times a day for 18 months.
Wow.
Horrific, horrific doses. When I was reading the Senate hearings, part of what they were attempting to do, it was all for behavior modification, and you think of the Bourne Identity movies, okay? And part of what they were attempting in this behavior modification was to see if they could make people homicidal. It's right in the hearing. Another victim that we know of MKUltra was Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. He was a student at Harvard when he was exposed to it.
That might be your next book.
Maybe.
So one of the things I want to talk about, too, at the end of the book, you've got some of the correspondence that you have, not only with Bulger, but also with John Connolly. And you have a letter that you wrote to the judge.
Yes.
Did he ever respond?
No. Not on, that was in regard to the judge was talking about allowing family members whose somebody in their family had been murdered to give impact statements to the judge at sentencing, but these family members, the particular murders, were not proven. So the jury, some of us were a little rattled by that, thinking, why did we deliberate if the judge is just going to ignore the fact that we said he didn't commit this murder? And so a couple of us wrote a letter to the judge. It should have been on the docket, because it was sent registered mail. We know they got it. Was never put on the docket, which means that the journalists, newspapers, should have been able to see that we wrote this letter. And the judge, in the end, determined that, yes, these people could speak. To take it a step further, the judge in Catherine Gregg's trial, Catherine Gregg was not being tried for any murders. But all of these same family members were allowed to give impact statements at her trial, even though she wasn't being tried for murder. It's just outrageous. Yeah.
You never asked Bulger why he didn't testify at his own trial. Why not?
A lot of things I would not ask him in the letters, because the letters are read. Mm-hmm. And I would ask him when I saw him face to face. The third time I went down to visit him, I had a number of questions I wanted to ask him. That was one, but I was not allowed, or he was not allowed, to come into the visitation room.
Oh, do you know, you waited 2 hours.
I waited 2 hours there. I had already been there twice before. They led me, an officer led me out, told me I could not visit with him. When I asked why, he said because I did not know him prior to incarceration. Well, that's one of the questions on the paperwork you fill out, which I had already stated and had been in there twice already. And I pointed that out to him. Then he said, well, you were a juror. I said, the trial ended 3 years ago. And I said, what is it? I was a juror, or because I didn't know him prior to incarceration. He said, you can't visit him. And he walked me out the door. He already had his keys in my keys in his hand that were in a locker. And I exited. Yeah. And Bulger told me in a letter right after that he was on the opposite side of that door for 2 hours, and they were running around waiting for a phone call.
Do you know who that phone call was from?
I have suspicions, yeah, but no, I do not know.
Do you still correspond with him?
I do, yes.
Yeah. All right, the book is The Truth Be Damned. We'll have a link with more information at our website, capeandislands.org. Janet Euler, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Mindy.